So we're going to start out today, and we're going to talk about a game called Yeti Bowl. And Yeti Bowl is a fun, simple HTML5 game that we built for this to kind of illustrate how easy it is to build games. Then I'm going to take you through, I'm going to show you how to build this game. We're going to build a simple version of it. Then we're going to talk about how to distribute it on the web. And then in the second half, we're going to talk about how you can take this game and move it into a marketplace like Windows 8. Monetize it, add features to it, and make it a real rich experience for your users. So, to start with, how does a game work? Now, I'm probably in here talking to people who have been studying this for a while, but in a simple form, games are really animation. All we're doing is we're drawing something on the screen. And we draw something on the screen, we change something about it, and then we draw the next frame, and then the next frame. And so as time passes, we display one frame at a time, and it appears to be movement and animation to the users. So this is something that they've been doing in cartoons for years, where they've taken a picture of a slide, and then they move the cells around a little bit and take another picture of it, and then play those pictures together, and they have animation cartoons. So it's the same type of thing, only what we're going to be doing is, in addition to building the animation portion, we're also going to be building the portion that handles the logic, too, that determines what figures, what players, what entities on the screen should be moving, and which ones should be staying still. So there's a couple ways that we can do that with HTML5. And for my knowledge here, how many would consider themselves pros with JavaScript HTML5? How many would consider themselves smarter than the average user, that area? And what about absolute beginners? Okay, well good, I'm very glad that we have a mix in here. So if there's things that I'm going through and I'm talking about that you don't understand, I'm trying to break them down and go over the components of them. But if you have questions, something I'm missing, feel free to ask me. We can stop and we can address that to make sure that everyone's on the same page here. So when we talk about DOM elements, we're talking about different elements on the screen. So within the document of your page, you have things like divs and paragraph tags and images, and those are all DOM elements. So one of the things that we can do when we're animating is we can take DOM elements on the screen and we can move them around. So in this case, we would have two images, and one image is going to be a mountain, the other image is going to be a hiker, and we can show the hiker climbing up the mountain. So actually, what I did neglect to do before I did that is show you the game. Kind of show you what you're working towards in the end, okay? So this is Yeti Bowl. I'm the Yeti at the top there, and I have these hikers who are climbing up the mountain, and I'm going to drop my snowball and hit them and knock them off the mountain. The goal is to get as many hikers off as I can. If three of them make it to the top, then they steal all three of my flags, and the game is over. So it's a fun little game that lets you be slightly destructive and mean to hikers at the same time. Okay, so let's take a couple of those ideas. And what we have here is we have an image of a mountain and an image of a hiker. And I have them sitting on top of each other. So what I did for that is I added a little bit of CSS to position them. And CSS is generally what we use in web technologies to do our layouts, to do our look and feels of applications. So in this case, I'm taking the hiker and I'm positioning him strategically on top of the mountain so that it looks like the hiker is there on the mountain. Now I need the hiker to move, right? I want the hiker to move up the mountain. So what I'm going to do with these two DOM elements, with these two images, is I'm going to put a listener on the mountain so that when I click on it, it moves the hiker a few pixels every time. Okay, so when I click on the mountain, you can see it's going to move the hiker. It makes it look like he's climbing the mountain. And if I click faster, it appears that he animates. Okay, so that's pretty simple. That's really basic ideas. And all we're doing is we have some logic and we have some animation, right? So the logic is me telling the hiker that he needs to move up 3 pixels and over 1 pixel. The animation is actually changing the CSS that represents it on the screen. Now this is a very simple way of doing it with DOM elements, but with HTML5, we actually have some new features that makes that a lot easier and a lot better performing for us. So for this one, we're going to use a canvas tag. Now DOM elements, in some cases, you may have a browser that doesn't support canvas. It might be an older browser. And for that case, you may have to revert to DOM elements. There's some browsers that don't support canvas well, where the performance is just not good enough for a game, so you might have to use DOM elements. But when you don't have to, you can generally have better performance with canvas, because with DOM elements, you have a lot of overhead with that. So whenever I'm moving these elements up and down a page, the page actually has to repaint every time it sees something repositioned or something moving. So there's a lot more garbage collection and a lot more cycling that has to go on for my CPU whenever I'm using DOM elements. So instead, what I'm going to do is I'm going to use a canvas tag. Now, the canvas tag basically gives you a blank slate for you to draw on. So it basically gives you a drawing surface inside of your browser. We're going to tell it that we're going to draw an image on it. You can also tell it I want to draw a line, or I want to draw an arc, or you can even say specific pixels that I want to color. I want to make this pixel blue and this one red. So it gives you the ability to have a real flexible drawing environment inside of your browser. And since you're using this drawing, this blank drawing canvas, it doesn't have the overhead that DOM elements has. So the browser doesn't have to repaint every time it sees something change. So whenever we use a canvas tag, it allows the rest of our page to be very simple. And generally, we want to keep things simple. Whenever you're building a game, the more complicated you make it, the more overhead there's going to be. So the more performance that has to go into logic and things like that, and the less of a user's CPU or a user's GPU is going to be available for you to actually draw your game. And we want to make sure that whenever we build a game that we can handle higher frame rates, we can handle changes to the graphic environment real easy. So we want to maintain things like our DOM to a minimum. So for this game, what we're going to do is we're going to have some really basic features in our DOM. So we're going to have, you can see the container, which is going to wrap our whole game up, and that's just going to be a div in this case. And then we're going to put a canvas right inside of it. Now everything that you've seen on the screen from the game is going to be drawn inside of the canvas tag. The one exception is going to be the background image is actually just going to be a background on the body tag. But everything else, the Yetis, the mountains, the snowballs, the hikers, they're all going to be drawn right onto the canvas. And then we're going to have some DOM elements for our controls at the bottom. So in addition to being able to support keyboard, we want to support touch as well. So we'll use some on-screen elements to handle those touch points. So in essence, inside of our body tag, this is what it's going to look like. It's going to have a few simple elements. Allows us to keep that document nice and light. We're not going to make any changes to it. We're not going to add any elements. We're not going to delete any elements. It's all going to be handled within our canvas tag. Okay, so one of the problems that you see on our demo here is that our mountain isn't sized properly for this page. So I actually have to scroll up and down if I want to see the top and the bottom. So again, we're going to pull out some CSS for this. And this is a viewport CSS property that has newly been submitted to the W3C. So that's why you'll see that dash MS in front of it. Has anyone ever heard of a browser prefix? And the most popular one is probably dash WebKit. You see quite a bit out there. So whenever you see a dash something in CSS or in JavaScript, that's what we call vendor prefix. And it's a sign that that technology is still experimental. So it's implemented. We as browser makers are implementing it to show that this feature can be implemented in multiple browsers, but it's still experimental, which means that the draft for the standard is not yet complete, so it may change. So whenever you use a feature like this, and I am going to use this today, but whenever you use a feature like this, be sure that you as a developer are watching very closely what happens with that standard, because it could change, and the way that the browser implements can change as well. So the way that your browser supports something that has a vendor prefix could change from version to version of a browser. So you want to make sure that you're, as the developer, very vigilant as to what's going on whenever you're using a browser prefix. In this case, our viewport is going to help us size the screen. So we're telling the viewport exactly how big the contents on the page should be. We're telling it we want the viewport to be X number of pixels, or in this case, we're telling it we want it to be the same height as the device. So basically, all the content on the page, all those elements that we have in the DOM, are going to be resized to fit inside of the page. So when I apply that to the same page, you'll see that now the mountain and the hiker actually fit into the browser. So go back here, this is what it looks like without the CSS, this is what it looks like with the CSS. Now, one of the features is when I resize this page, the contents are going to resize with it. So since it's sizing it to a particular height, no matter what the window height is, it's going to fit that screen completely, or fit the viewport completely. So whether it's something small, like a phone that we want to run it on, or it's something larger, like a desktop computer, the contents are going to resize for us. So that makes it real easy for us as developers to support any screen size. And that's another issue. When you're using a browser, you have an infinite number of screen sizes and browser combinations out there. So you need technologies like this that are going to help you adapt to each of them. So this CSS is going to help us with the sizing. We're going to be able to take that same code that we have and resize it to fit whatever browser, whatever device the users are viewing our game with. Okay, now we're going to draw the images on a canvas.
I'm just curious, with the conditional orientation portrait, so if I have a browser window on my desktop and I resize it so it's taller than it is, why does that kick in there, or only on a device with an accelerometer?
Yeah, so that's a great question. Not every device is going to support a media query, but this allows you, if you have the media query for orientation, if you would change the orientation, you can specify different sizes for the device when it's portrait versus landscape. So if the device doesn't support it, it won't do anything. So what that means is that you always want to have a fallback. So you want to have a certain CSS at the top. So we have our media viewport at the top that will handle every browser, right? And then if we have a browser that supports orientation, or you know, in our case, a game that supports orientation, then as you change the orientation, you'll be able to specify different CSS heights to make it take full screen whenever it's, in this case, portrait, or have space on both sides whenever it's
needed. Okay. So it's based on the device orientation, not whether the browser's dimensions are...
Exactly, yes. So that's an actual trigger that will happen inside of the browser based on which way the accelerometer is reporting.
What's the difference between what's the difference between setting width and height in the viewport versus just saying width 100%, height 100%?
Okay, so that's a good question. Whenever you say, the question was, what's the difference between using the viewport versus just setting 100% height and 100% width? So when you set 100% height or 100% width, that's not going to be based on the amount of screen that you have, but on the size of the parent element. So in this case, the size of the body tag would be considered 100%. So in the case where I had the images where you had to scroll down, the page was taller than the screen, so 100% would have made it the size of the page instead of the size of the screen. What the viewport does is it allows us to literally capture the amount of space that the users have access to on their screen. So if they have a, you know, a 1080 screen, right, or a 720 screen, that's how many pixels they're going to have available to render on. And we want to make sure that we're using the screen rendering pixels instead of the page size, which would scroll. Good. Okay, so drawing images to the canvas. We're going to start out and we're just going to take these two images, okay? And we're going to pull them out of the DOM and draw them onto the canvas. So remember, the canvas is just a blank slate. So right now it's just empty. It's not, doesn't even have color. It would be transparent in the areas that we aren't painting. So we're going to take those images and we're going to paint them onto the DOM. So when you think about a canvas, I'm sure we've all at least heard of the game Battleship, where you have like E1 and F2, and you kind of have that big grid that you're playing with, and you got to pick each of those dots to see if you're hitting someone's boats or not. Well, canvas is very similar, but instead of having letters and numbers, we just have numbers and numbers. So you can think of the top left-hand corner as being 0, 0. If you go in one pixel and down one pixel, it's going to be 1, 1. If you go in and down 10, it'll be 10, 10. Okay? So we're looking at this basically as a big grid. And in order to draw inside of that grid, we need to first find the canvas tag. And so we're going to use the document.getElementById, find the canvas tag, and then we're going to get the context of that canvas. Okay, the context is basically going to be the drawing surface. In this case, we're going to be looking at the 2D context because we're going to be drawing all 2D, two-dimensional images. So we're going to get that 2D context. Then inside of that 2D context, we have a whole series of APIs that we can use to draw on. So in this case, we're going to be using DrawImage. So we already made a reference to the context of the canvas, and we called that canvas context. So we have canvas context.drawImage. And then inside of there, what we need to specify first is the image we're going to draw on the canvas. So it would either be, in our case, a mountain or a hiker. And then inside of that, we're going to specify the position that we want to draw it on. So if we want to draw it at the starting at the very top left-hand corner, it'll be 0, 0. And then source size is going to be the size of the image that we're using. So if we're only going to take a certain part of that image, we'll specify that with source size. And then destination position is going to be where on the canvas we're going to draw it. And then destination size is going to be based on the size of the image. Are we going to use it the same size that the image was, or are we going to make it bigger or smaller? So we can use that for scaling. So I did misspeak. The source position is where on the source we're going to start. And then the source size is basically where we're going to end. So that's going to help us determine where on the canvas we're going to be drawing. So we'll show that in action, and I think it'll be a lot more clear after we show it. Okay, so to draw an image on the canvas, what we're going to start out with is we have our canvas, and then we have our two images. We're then going to add in our CSS, and in this case, in addition to the viewport, I'm also going to put a little border around the canvas. You don't need a border around the canvas. This is just for us to understand where the canvas starts and where the canvas ends. Once we get our game rolling a little bit, we'll take that off. And then we've got a couple lines of JavaScript that we're going to use for this. The first thing we're going to do is we're going to put variables pointing to both the mountain image and the hiker image, and then, like we spoke before, the canvas, and then the context of the canvas. And in this case, I'm just going to call the context CTX for short, so I don't have to write as much out. From there, we're going to pass in the image reference, and then we're going to draw it onto the screen. Okay, or excuse me, we're going to draw it onto the canvas. So in order to fire that draw function, what I've done is I've added images to the page. Sorry, I've added buttons to the page up here that's going to add each of those images. So if we first hit the mountain button, it's going to fire that function, and it's going to pass in the image reference for the mountain, and we're going to take it and put it at 0, 0, which is the very top of the screen. So the image of the mountain is basically going to be painted over the whole canvas. I'm then going to hit the button for the hiker and put him on top of the mountain there. And so for that, we have the button calling the draw image, and the image reference that we're passing in is going to be for the hiker, and then its position is going to be 1,000 pixels down and 500 pixels over. So we're telling it to draw those images, and then we're telling it where on the canvas we want it to draw. So order is obviously important too. If I were to draw the hiker first and then the mountain, he would obviously be on the back side of the mountain there. And we need to make sure that when we're drawing, that we're drawing our images in the right order. So the image that's going to be the background will be the first thing that we draw. And then as we position other entities or other elements on top of it, we're going to put them in the order that we want them visible. So the topmost image is going to be the last thing that we paint. Okay. Questions about drawing?
I don't know if you're planning to go either or not, but are there ways to reorder it? Correct me if I'm wrong, but we probably wouldn't be redrawing these every single update.
Okay, so the question was, is there a way to reorder these images, or are we going to be redrawing it every time? So actually, every frame, we are going to redraw it. We are going to redraw it. So first of all, when we paint the images on the screen, we're actually painting pixels. We're taking the pixels from the image, and we're painting them onto the canvas. So it's, I use the word paint because it's a lot like paint. If I paint blue and then let it dry and paint red on top of it, you know, I can't move that blue around, right? So we're going to be taking the pixels from those images and painting them out. Now, when we talk about our loop, we're actually going to be taking that image data every time and painting it. Now, in some cases, it is actually, you get better performance from repainting the screen every time. Because sometimes your browser can actually recognize that you're doing full screen rendering and hardware accelerate that for you. Sometimes it's actually better to repaint a certain section of the screen. So remember when we talked about the draw image, where we can specify where on an image we're going to draw? You can actually just pull a section of an image and repaint that section on top of the canvas. If it's better performance for you to just redraw one section instead of redrawing the whole canvas, you can. So I've also seen some other creative instances where people will use multiple canvases and stack canvases on top of each other. So if they have some images that don't change a lot, they might put that in a canvas in the back, and that way they're just drawing different canvases instead of redrawing every time. But in our game, we're definitely going to be redrawing every screen. We don't have I want to keep it simple, for one. And in this case, there's really no performance gains to finding that section of the screen to redraw versus redrawing the whole canvas. That's a great question. Okay, so now what we need is we need a game loop. Because we know that we can draw on the canvas, but we want to make sure that we can handle things like interaction and collision of objects. We want to make sure that we can handle that logic so that we can redraw something different on the screen. So for this, we're going to do what we call a game loop. And our game loop has basically two halves to it. It has the update portion and it has the draw portion. So whenever you think about the update portion, you can think about doing things like updating the state of an entity. So in our case, and when I say entity, I'm basically talking about the different components that we have in the game. So if you have a hiker, your hiker might be climbing up the mountain, or he might be falling from the mountain, right? So he might have a different state for when he's climbing versus when he's falling. Your snowball might be colliding with something, it might not be colliding with something. Your game might be over, or it might be in play mode. So the different state of things is something that you need to manage in the update cycle. whether things are colliding, and we'll talk about how to figure out whether there's a collision between items or not. That's something that you'll check during your update cycle. Things like the score, what the score is, those are things that you can track and update during the update cycle. So all of the logic is happening during the update cycle. So you're then going to flip over, and based on the updates that you make, you're going to draw in the other half of the cycle. So you're constantly going to go back and forth between updating and drawing it on the screen. Update what happens, update the inputs, redraw something else on the screen. So it'll go back and forth between updating and drawing. So whatever happens to those entities, they change position, you're then going to turn around and draw them in a different position on the screen. And just like the cartoons, where we play frame by frame things that have changed, we're going to do the same thing with our game. We're just going to cycle through and through and draw something different on the screen each time. So let's look what that would look like. First thing we're going to do here is we're going to have our canvas tag, and we're going to have our images. And then we're going to start with references to our images. So we're going to be pulling those out of the DOM, our canvas reference, our context, and then the hiker position are going to be some values that I want to start with, so I know where on the mountain I want to start the hiker. And then the draw. So this is going to be our draw function that's going to take the images and draw them, and then it's going to update the hiker's position. So we haven't taken any inputs yet, no controls from the user. All we're going to do is just change slightly the hiker's position every time. So let's see what that would look like. All right, so I have my images on the left here. Now watch what happens. Okay, so as you can see, I'm redrawing over and over again, but since my images are stacking on top of each other, you'll see things like my transparency is getting darker, and my hiker leaves this, you know, trail as he goes off the side of the screen. Because although I'm taking that image data and drawing it over and over again, I'm never clearing the canvas. So luckily, we have a method for that as well. So we have a clear rectangle on top of the convex context of this canvas that we can use to just wipe out all the image data on there. And then to loop it, we're going to set the interval. So in this case, I'm just doing a simple set interval where every 16 milliseconds, it's going to draw something new on the screen. So it's going to be calling the draw function over and over again every 16 milliseconds. And remember, every time the draw function fires, it changes the position of the hiker. So that's our cycle, where we draw over and over again. The update happens when we change the position of the hiker. The draw happens whenever we do the draw image on the canvas. So whenever I add the clear rectangle method in there, you'll see a difference. My hiker is now going to move up the mountain and go off into hiker heaven. And he doesn't leave anything behind, right? Because we've cleared this. And since our canvas is transparent, anything that we have going on that canvas is going to show through to the next layer. So we need to make sure that in every every draw part of our loop, we not only handle the data that we want to put there, but we want to make sure that we remove the data that we don't want there anymore. Okay, now so far what I've done is I've taken those images and I've loaded them into the page. And then to get my image data, I use a reference to that image. So in order to do this, I have to include those images on my page. And additionally, it's not actually going to start getting image data from those images until the images load. So if I refresh this, it's happening a little quick for you to see probably, but there's a flash, right? In between every time, there's a flash here because it needs to wait for me to load those images. In this case, I'm loading them right from my hard drive, so it's not taking long. But if I was loading it from a server, it might take me a few seconds to get those images loaded into the page. So while it's waiting for those images to load, it doesn't have any image data to draw, so it's just drawing a blank canvas. Now, we actually don't want it to really draw until there's something to draw. And this gives us, because otherwise it's just a waste of resources, right? So what we're going to do is we're going to add in a loading function that helps us to load the images dynamically with JavaScript, and then know when those images are loaded so that we can start drawing them on the canvas. So this is what I'm going to do. And I know the code is starting to get a little bit more complex here, but I'm actually doing a lot of the same things over and over again. So I have my variables at the top that I'm bringing in, and if you notice, instead of having a pointer to the mountain image in the DOM or the hiker image in the DOM, I'm actually now creating a new image. So I'm starting with a new image called mountain. It's an image in the DOM. It doesn't have any source, so there's nothing for you to see. But we actually have that image element for both the mountain and the hiker. And the other thing that I've added in there is a variable that I call asset count. So the asset count is going to help me keep track of how many images I'm planning on loading in the DOM and knowing when each of those images is loaded. I don't want to start drawing when only two of the three images are ready. I want to make sure that all my images are on the page before I start that draw cycle. So once I have those images, I then add an event listener to each of them. So the event listener allows us to listen for a particular event in that image's life cycle. In this case, that image is going to fire an event when it's loaded. So we started out with the creation of the image. So that's not actually the load event. That's just the creation of the image. Now, at the bottom of the screen here, you'll see a hiker.src, which is a source reference, and a mountain.src. And that's where we assign an actual image to it. So since we assign an image to it here, when that image is loaded, that fires the load event. Okay? So the image loads, fires this load event, and all it's doing is upping the asset count. So we want to know whether there's one asset loaded or two assets loaded. In this case, once two assets are loaded, we'll then fire off our init method and start the draw. So this is what our init method looks like. It waits, and it waits until the asset count has reached two, which knows that it's loading both the hiker and the mountain image. And then it goes ahead and starts our set interval. Okay, so what this is going to allow us to do is load those images dynamically. Instead of referencing them on the page, we have the same result, but we don't have the original hiker and the original mountain in the DOM like we did before. So here you can see we have to have it right beside our canvas. In this case, we're loading them dynamically, so they never actually have to go into the DOM itself. Just loads it directly into memory and then uses those pixels to write onto the canvas. Now, there's one other key aspect missing here, and that is a little bit of intelligence to how we draw. Now, there are different types of devices. There are going to be devices with like ARM processors in them that would run relatively slow. Or you're going to have devices like these Alienware systems that are in this lab that are going to draw pretty fast. And in this case, I actually have to draw slow enough of an interval to make sure that it handles the frame rate of every computer. But what I want to be able to do is I want to be able to take advantage of whatever resources are going to be available on that user's system. So if they are able to draw at 30 frames per second, I want to update my game at 30 frames per second. If they're able to draw at 60 frames per second, I want to draw at 60. And sometimes you're going to have flux depending on all of the other things that you're doing in the background, resources to be able to draw 60 frames per second sometimes. you may have resources that can only draw 30 frames per second at some time. So what we're going to do for that is we're going to use a new HTML5 feature called Request Animation Frame. And what this is going to do is it's going to make a request to the system to draw the frame as soon as the resources are available. So instead of me telling it every 16 milliseconds, request a draw, it's going to wait until system resources are available, and then it's going to draw.
Is there any way to query the delta time for that in addition to just doing that?
Absolutely. You can keep track of that. It's not within the API itself, but you can, you know, use a frame rate meter type of thing where you're just doing a little bit of math to see how often it draws. Okay. The other thing you can do, which we're not going to do here, but you can actually use something like set interval and request animation frame together to hit a specific target. If you want to say, well, my target is 30 frames or 60 frames, you don't want it to go to 120 frames because that would be a waste. You could use them together. But to keep it simple, we're going to use just the request animation frame, and we're going to cycle through. Okay, so this is what our code is going to change to. So instead of having the set interval that calls the draw function, we're actually going to call the draw function itself, and then once we finish with all the drawing, we're going to use request animation frame to call it the same method. Okay? So the draw method is going to keep calling itself. So the draw function at the end calls the draw function again. And that way, it uses request animation frame to determine the timing and will then start over again at the top of the draw method. We'll handle all of our updates, and it'll get to the bottom, and it'll draw again. So what we have here is the ability to take something that's set to the lowest common denominator, and make it match the resources that are on the screen. So now our hiker actually is going to use request animation frame to determine how often he's going to draw on the screen. And it'll, based on the system resources that are available, will draw as often as it can. Okay, so what we've done is we've taken and we've laid out all of the basics of the game. So we haven't actually put these together yet to make a playable game. And we're going to take a 5-minute break, and then we're going to come back and we're going to take all these building blocks and we're going to assemble them together into our very own version of Yeti Bowl. So why don't you guys take a 5-minute break, and we'll start back after that.